Coppell's Western Cape Radio, CWCP, broadcasting from Worcester, South Africa.
Welcome to the Worcester Reports, a program of stories, Christian devotions, and music. Broadcast on CWCP, Coppell's Western Cape Radio.
South Africa, turn back to God. South Africa, turn back to God. South Africa, turn back to God. South Africa, turn back to God.
Welcome to the Worcester Reports. This is Tony, and I have a local Worcester personality for you in today's program. You may not necessarily know the name of Fricky Berta, but if you've ever been to Pick and Pay on a Saturday morning, you've almost certainly seen him and heard him, because he is, amongst other things, a street busker, and he sings with his guitar on many Saturdays. I was curious. I wanted to know more about Fricky, so I invited him home, and here's his story.
On a cold and rainy winter's day, she came in through the door. I've never seen such a pretty face in this part of town before. Her face was young and beautiful, her hair was dark and long. With sadness in her big blue eyes, I knew something was wrong. He was standing near the cocktail bar, talking to a lady friend. He didn't even notice her as she stood right close to him. What happened next I can't forget till this very day. She turned at him and in a shaky voice I overheard her say, "Daddy, since you left us, Mommy's not the same. She's lost the will to carry on, feel that she's to blame. Daddy, she still loves you, and I know you love her too. So won't you please come home, Daddy? Daddy, I'm begging you." The years have come and gone so fast, my future's looking bright. I just thank the precious Lord above for the joy brought to my life. And sometimes in my daughter's eyes I dream of yesterday. I see that girl, I hear her voice, the words she had to say. "Daddy, since you left us, Mommy's not the same. She's lost the will to carry on, feel that she's to blame. Daddy, she still loves you, and I know you love her too. So won't you please come home, Daddy? Daddy, I'm begging you. Daddy, since you left us, Mommy's not the same. She's lost the will to carry on, feel that she's to blame. Daddy, she still loves you, and I know you love her too. Oh, won't you please come home, Daddy? Daddy, I'm begging you. Oh, won't you please come home, Daddy? Daddy, I'm begging you."
If you live in Worcester, you will have heard that sound from that singer, particularly if you go shopping in Pick and Pay, because that was Fricky Berta, who frequently on Saturdays is to be heard singing his songs for people as they go into the store. Well, I was intrigued by this and I wanted to meet Fricky and find out a little bit more about him. So welcome to CWCP Radio, Fricky.
Thank you very much, Uncle Tony. It's nice meeting you all and I can't wait for the rest to come.
Now,
anyone could see if they're walking past you that you are not with sight. They may not realize that you're not with hearing as well.
Yes.
How old were you when you lost your sight?
I was born blind, and then they gave me an operation. They messed up my eyes, and then another doctor gave me some sight on my left eye, 15%. And then in 1995, I was 32 years old when I realized that my sight is going again. And the doctor told me, this time there's nothing you can do about it. You still will have sight, but not what you had before.
And how old were you when you realized you were also losing your hearing?
Well, I was about 24 years old. And then I still not wanted to believe that. And then the doctor said to me, listen, unfortunately, they've got to do something for you. And then in 1991, I started wearing hearing aids.
And I must say that you wear hearing aids very well. People would not even realize that you were wearing hearing aids if they didn't see them. So you're a master of the hearing aid.
Well, that I can only give my thanks to De La Butte School for the Deaf People and a woman called Shunette. She is the audiologist there, and she tuned them the way they must be tuned. And for that reason, I can just say thanks to De La Butte for assisting me in that case.
And thousands of other people who they've helped,
yes.
I have no doubt. In fact, I know that for a fact. Okay, let's have another song, and then I want to talk to you some more.
Sure.
She's a barmaid in a West Texas dance hall. She's there every night till they close. And the cowboy is paying for the jukebox while she plays San Antonio Road. Well, I know that her life ain't 'cause the lines in her face says it all. And she still is a beautiful woman in the lights of the Texas dance hall. And she won't sit down at your table, and I know that you can't hold her hand. Won't go home with you, cowboy. She's in love with the rodeo man. Now he's hot and he's scarred and he's graying, and he's stoned most all of the time. And he drinks at a dark corner table while he waits there until closing time. And she won't sit down at your table, and I know that you can't hold her hand. She won't go home with you, cowboy. She's in love with the rodeo. No, she won't sit down at your table, and I know that you can't hold her hand. She won't go home with you, cowboy. She's in love with the rodeo man. She's in love with the rodeo man.
I'm here with Fricky Berta. That was him singing. And I'm sure, again, that you will recognize his unique voice and style. Fricky,
yes.
You mentioned that you'd lost your sight at a particular time. Tell us a bit more about your experience, that traumatic experience, and the way it changed your life.
Well, I was always having this dream of becoming a neuro or a plastic surgeon one day. And I said, well, if God would give me the power, I would like to be. And on my 12th birthday, my granny again asked me, Frick, you know, you had that very big serious operation a year ago. The doctors told us you only had 6 months to live. But now that is all over. You've survived those 6 months and you're still with us. Now, what are your future plans, my son? So I said, you people know, Gran, that I would like to be a doctor and nothing else. There's nothing else I can be. So my grandmother said, okay, this is unavoidable. So she made an appointment with Dr. Louis Creer in Johannesburg for the Wednesday after my birthday. So she and my late grandfather went with me and they took me to that doctor. And she told him all about what happened with me. And he do his examinations and things. And he took my hands, put them in front of him on the table. And he said, God, tell me why. Louis Creer, no, he's not allowed to ask. But in this case, I need to know, God, why. You've took the most wonderful talent. And I have to do something brutal today. And God, only you knows the reason. So I asked him, Doctor, now, why are you so upset? He said, my boy, these two hands will never see an operating theater as a doctor. You'll never even touch a scalpel. In 1 second, something in me just died. We went out and I ran down the stairs into the street. I said, I'd rather kill myself because this is not something that I want to accept. I cannot, I mean, I know one day I might lose hearing or I might lose something else. Now this also. So I said to my grandparents, please, you and your God, I don't need you. You I need as my parents, but that so-called God I don't need because he's just a brutal demon that doesn't want to give anybody what they want. He wants to prove he's got power, but he lied when he said he can cure, he can do this, he can do that. Even I said to the minister when he spoke to me, I said, why don't you go and hang on that cross and tell me if it's nice, eh? Because I don't think there's somebody, no man on earth could suffer and could still rose from the death. Don't tell me that bull of lies. And so it went for years. I went back to school in 1976. I listened when they took us to church and everywhere, but my heart wasn't there. And one evening, Mr. Detway said to me, my home father, he said, Fricky, I'm just hoping that something will happen to you one day. Because I can see when we go to church on Sundays, you have been very irritating. And then he left it to that. And then in 1994, a week before my 21st birthday, I had to go to practice to play in church in front of a lot of people where a doctor, trompeterine from Cape Town, was about to do a lovely service. And together with him was a pastor, Langerman. And I said, okay, I'll do it. But remember, I need 500 rand. This is not because I've got a life to live.
This was to play the organ.
Yeah.
In church.
Yes. I said, I don't do this for free. So the pastor said, okay, we are needing you badly. There's nobody else who can do it. I'll see what we can come up with. And then I went to start practicing. And my grandfather left me there at the organist's home. And he said, Frick, I'll come and fetch you later. And then the organist father said, no, don't worry. Helen and I will bring him back when we finish. So I practiced with her and she showed me how the church organ works because she had the same organ at home. And then after that, her father said, Helen, make us some coffee because I would just want to talk with him a bit about, explain to him something about Dr. Turin and Dr. Professor Langerman's way of doing things. She left the room and he took my hands, put them in front of the table in front of him. And he asked me, looking me in the eyes, and he said, my boy, I want to ask you only one question. If you want to eat me, you're welcome. I'm an old man, but I don't care. as long as I know, I do now what I know I've got to do. I said, why? What's wrong? He said, where are you going with your life? And which route are you walking? Next week and Tuesday, when that clock strikes 12 o'clock midnight and start Wednesday, the 13th of March, 1984, from that moment on, where are you going to? And he left it to that. We drank coffee. I was about to choke him off and swear at him. But something, you can say it was like a, maybe a feeling, maybe just something, I can't explain it. But something just hushed my mouth totally. But when I got home, that words was start remembering in my head. And I was starting to get restless and up and down. I went outside, I came back in. And about 11 o'clock that night, I said to my granny, I need to speak to Pastor Van Willig. She said, but can't it wait till tomorrow? I said, no, I don't think so. So at 11 o'clock at night, here I'm phoning the pastor. I said, Pastor, I know it's very late. And I know you could choke me if you want to. But I need to speak to you urgently. That's not something for the telephone. So that man said, Frikkie, I'm on my way. Sister and Marianne and I will be there in 5 minutes. So it was about 11:15 when they walked into our house. Now we stayed in Springfontein in the Southern Free State, a small little country town. And as the pastor and his wife and daughter walked in, my granny said, Pastor, I'm sorry that he woken you this time of night. So he said, Mari, God isn't sorry, neither am I, because God is going to do something tonight that you, Frick, and the whole world in his family waiting for. The whole world means that time, my friends and family and everybody who knew me. So the pastor said, God is going to do something tonight that you and I can only never thought it would happen, but it happened. So he started, he said to me, what's the problem? Why did you call me? So I told him what the guy told me. He said, Frikkie, now, what do you feel about it? I said, Pastor, I don't know what to feel. Somehow I wish I could believe that what he told me is true. Where am I going to? I'm not sure. Because God lied to me. He said he can help everybody. He can give you what you want. But he knew what I wanted to do. So the pastor said, well, you never told me. Tell me now, what is it that you want? So I said, Pastor, I'm not going to be 21 years old next week. I can't even go and study to do the work I would love to do, the work that is suitable for me. So he said, what's that? I said, I wanted to be a neuro or a plastic surgeon. I said, now you might think, I want to be this great diva with my big mouth and my, oh, the wonderful Frikkie Botha. He's making a lot of money now with his operations. I said, no, that's not what I wanted. I wanted the people to say, that humble man who does work in the way that God gave him the power to, the man with the healing touch, the man with the touch that God gave him. So Pastor looked at me, he said, Frikkie, although that might never happen, God's still going to use you, and he still needs you, and he still loves you. That night, I went back to God totally. Yes, I had my ups. I even went to be underwater, having the baptizing. So, okay, I still had my ups and downs. Even now, dear days, I still have my ups and downs. There was even a time now when I was divorced 10 years ago that I believed that I don't belong in God's presence. So I said, I don't going to go to church. I don't want to be with you people talking gospel, because God don't need something like me. I'm not worthy to be with him, because if I was, he wouldn't have taken my wife and child away. Even now, still at times, I get that feeling that maybe there's something wrong. Maybe he punished me for something that only he knows about. But then people said, no, it's not the truth. So I can be very honest today in saying, being here with this radio station and Uncle Tony, I think God tries to say to me, I need you in a certain way that only I know about. And I think Uncle Tony maybe knows, I'm not sure. Because if he doesn't know, then why did he came and give me a nice interview why did God send him to me on that first time at Pick and Pay? Only on a day when I was also thinking everything is going to fall apart again. But since the day you promised me that you're going to have the interview and things, I was starting to live up and get myself going, and that was it. And I know now for sure there are people out there who needs to be helped in a different way than I would have to help when I had a scalpel in the hands.
Fricky, sing me another song.
Oh, it's crying time again, you're gonna leave me. I can see that far away look in your eyes. I can tell it by the way you hold me, darling, that it won't be long before it's trying time. Now you say you found someone that you love better. It's the way it happened every time before. And as sure as the sun comes up tomorrow, trying time will start when you walk out the door. Oh, it's crying time again, you're gonna leave me. I can see that far away look in your eyes. I can tell it by the way you hold me, darling, that it won't be long before it's crying time. Now they say that absence makes the heart grow fonder, and the tears are only rain to make love grow. But my love for you will never grow no stronger if I live to be 100 years old. Oh, it's crying time again, you're gonna leave me. I can see that far away look in your eyes. I can tell it by the way you hold me, darling, that it won't be long before it's crying time. Oh, it won't be long before it's crying time.
Well, this next song, Being You, by the late Bless Bridges. I was divorced on the 7th of August 2009. And a week later, this young lady came up to me, gave me a piece of paper she's been writing on. So my friend came to me and I said to him, Tommy, what is on this paper? He said, Fricky, her name is Simone, and she wanted you. Now, I'm not sure, she didn't specific said which you she wanted. So her father came up, he said, he whistled the tune. So Tommy said, this one. So the man shook his head. Then he whistled again, and I said, no, Tommy, I don't think so. So my producer, who was on my CD with me, from out of nowhere she came, she said, hey, moet my nou nie teleerstel nie. Kom, jy sal dit doen. Ek weet jy kan. So I said, okay, Denise. So Denise came to me and she put her arm, hands on my shoulders from the back, and she was just standing next to me, behind me there, close to me. And I started singing. But you've got this microphone technique. You've got to swap from one hand to another. But that evening I couldn't. I was just shivering all the time. And I had the mic in my left hand. And when that tune was finished, I just said, phew. Then I walked out and stood outside. I was so shivering. I was so crying. I couldn't breathe. So Denise came and she gave me a beer and said, come, sit with me. I'll calm you down a bit. So this is a very, very emotional piece of music.
You share the deepest of my secrets, share my dreams. Are the moon, the stars, the sun, or so it seems. And I spend one single day on earth without you. Every word I say is true, and there's nothing I wouldn't do for you. You share all my dreams, my wildest fantasies. For you, I would walk 1,000 miles, I'd cross the sea. You are a part of every single thought I'm thinking, and a reason for each thing I do. And I wanna spend my life with you. You are the sunlight at the break of every day. You are the rainbow when the storm clouds drift away. You are my heaven here on earth, there's no one like you. You are all my dreams come true, and I wanna spend my life with you. You are my heaven here on earth, there's no one like you. You are all my dreams come true, and I wanna spend my life with you.
I need to ask you something. Were you ever, Uncle Tony, at a doctor, looking him straight in the eyes, and he tells you, somebody has got only, let's say, 6 months or 2 months to live?
No.
The day I met my first wife, whom I was married to for 4 years, 1 month and 2 days, she was 18 years older than me, and she had cancer in a very bad way. It went away for a while after an operation was very successfully done in 1992. Then in 1995, it all started again. And we went on and off trying to get her as possible, as comfortable as possible. And then in October 1996, Professor MacPhail called me and my wife into his office there in Johannesburg Hospital, the Charlotte Nkeke these days. He looked at me straight. He said, "Mr. Botha, I'm sorry, but, you know, I'm not a guy who likes to lie to people. So unfortunately, your wife knows, because I've spoken to her already. It's time that you know now. She's got only maybe 3 or 4 months to live. If she's going to be still with us this time next year, which will be 97, I'll say yes, I can maybe have good hope for recovery." It was like in... If you ask me what happened, what went through your mind, I can't tell you. Because in that snap of my fingers, so many things flashed through my mind that there was nothing rational. I couldn't think properly. I just knew one thing. There's a long road lying ahead. And then all those questions started. Tell me, will it be okay? Will I have pain? Will I sleep? Why? How will it happen? That one day, I was walking to a wall. I was hitting the wall with my fist. I said, "God, I can't take it any longer. I don't know what to do, what to say." Our health doctor came into the room and he spoke to her. And what he said, I don't know. What he explained, I don't know. But she never asked questions again. She was just always wanted me near her and wanted me near all the time. And the day when she passed away, on the 14th of January, 1997, I wasn't with her. I was about to go to her, but I was too late because I had a late sleep because I was so tired, up and down to the hospital every single day, 14 days in a row, because she was like in a coma. She was just lying there and breathing. She was struggling to breathe. And that Monday when I saw her the last time, I just knew tomorrow this time, it's going to be all over. So that was it. And that's about, I can say about myself.
As you sit outside Pick and Pay,
yes,
playing for the people,
yes,
what are some of the thoughts that are coming into your mind? What are you thinking about the people who are hearing you?
Well, there's a song that Olivia Newton-John used to sing in the 70s. Every face tells a story. Now, I'm just thinking, I can't see the story on their faces, but I think everybody who passes me has got some or other story. Maybe more fortunate than I am, maybe less fortunate, I wouldn't know. And most of the people who are buying liquor, yeah, they are coming times. I'm also having my beer and my wine. I love it, but I'm not having too much of it. But when I see you coming out of the bottle store and I hear you say, "Ish, this bottle of whiskey now cost me 250 rand. Then I think to myself, "Ish, for that money, I could have bought something more useful. Yes, I would have maybe taken a bit to have a beer or a box, small box of wine. But I wouldn't spend a whole 250 on a bottle of liquor. That's something I will never do. Because that's not something that it's too much of a use. Because you're going to drink it out in a couple of days or a couple of hours. Then where's that 250 gone to? What's wrong with you? Where's your life going to? You're sick. And in the time you were in that flat spin, somebody might have needed your help so badly. And then tomorrow you might hear, listen, your child, your mother, whoever is passed away. You were in such a state. They needed your help. Let's say to go to hospital. You couldn't even stand on your own two feet. Then what would you do? How would you feel about that? Knowing you've made a choice to waste money on things like that. Yeah, you can say, I didn't know. How must I know they needed me? But that's the thing. There's always something you need to be focused on everything, and you need to be focused on your inner self. Because there's always going to be something out there warning you. There's something that's going to happen, or something's going to happen, and somebody's going to need you. So just always be in control of things. You can have it, but just remember, be in control. Whenever somebody calls your name, you know, look, I can handle it.
My very special guest today is and has been Fricky Berta, and I thank him so much for sharing some of his philosophy of life, which I think can help all of us. And to go out, let's match him up with a rock and roll band, and he's going to give us a rendering of Blueberry Hill.
Found my thrill on Blueberry Hill. On Blueberry Hill, where I found you, the moon stood still. On Blueberry Hill.
Worcester's very own Fricky Berta, who can be seen and heard outside Pick and Pay most Saturday mornings, entertaining people as they pass by. And if you do see him, tell him you heard him on the radio, and maybe drop a coin or a note into his box, and say hello to him, between songs, that is. I'm sorry to tell our many fans of Ways to Grow in God that we've not been able to produce an episode this week. Lorianne and I have been on a retreat in Bainscloof with some children from various townships and one or two other youth leaders, and there just wasn't the time to get Ways to Grow in God down onto the recording machine. So instead, we're going to do what we've done about three times before. We're going to continue a reading of the book Legacy by Jasper Coloti, and we're up to chapter 4. Now, we don't have time for the whole of chapter 4. In fact, chapter 4 is a long chapter, so we're only going to do possibly a third of it, and we will continue next time we have space available on the Worcester Reports. Legacy is the four steps to success and significance in life and business. And if you care about not just your own future financially, but also those of your children and your children's children, this book is for you. It is available on Amazon, and in the future, it may be available on audiobook. Beginning your personal journey to significance. Taking your first steps on your gig journey. The journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first step, Chinese proverb. Less than 1% of the entire population of the world have grown up in homes where they were taught how to live a three-generational life. For most of us, we are that transitional generation that will have to become the founding parents of their family dynasties. In understanding this personal family journey, it's important to understand a few truths. This is your journey. Therefore, you should never compare your pace or achievements with that of even your closest family relative. We are all uniquely designed and equipped for this earthly journey. You are the star of this movie. Every move you make and every decision you take on this journey will be watched by your children and their grandchildren, and most likely copied. Make sure that you set the right example. This book is about you. You are the main character. Any good storybook uses the opening chapter of the book to introduce the main character and describe the setting he or she finds themselves in. The more traumatic the situation and circumstances of the main character at the start of the book, the more interesting and gripping the story becomes. Every reader now is riveted on how the story will unfold and how the main characters will turn their bad situation around and get to the place of, and they lived happily ever after. Whether you are in your 20s or 70s when you start this three-generational journey, your whole life to date is just the opening chapter of your book. Since you're alive at the time of reading this book, your life is not yet over, and you have enough time to start your family journey and lay the foundation so that the generations after you can continue this journey. The pages of the rest of your book are still blank and yet to be written. Ask yourself, is the pen in your hand, where you decide the outcome and you write the script? Or are you leaving the pen in the hands of others, for example, your boss, family, circumstances, government, to write the rest of your story? By the way, it's a good idea to actually start a book of the story of your life. Spend time to write the opening chapter about your experiences to date and the lessons learned. Then update it as highs and lows of your life unfold. From time to time, you will just add small philosophical pieces. Your grandchildren will love to read your book one day. When the individuals start this journey, they are most often at the point of economic lack and pain, the result of the one-generational mindset. Never underestimate the power of the one-generational programming that is designed to keep you poor and easy to manipulate. It can be compared to a powerful gravitational force that exerts such a downward pull on you that every thought and action to try and escape this situation just seems too difficult. The journey from one generational mindset to the three generational mindset can be described as a road with four distinct stations you must pass. Or think of it as a metamorphosis, four stages you must go through, and in each stage undergo a radical change in mindset and behavior until you emerge as that three-generational individual living in prosperity and abundance. The journey of the four S's. Stage 1, struggle. A mindset of struggle is one that can't think straight and that is not capable of planning meaningfully for the future. The struggle mindset finds itself constantly in crisis mode and feelings of being pressurized by circumstances. I have to pay school fees now, and I don't know where I'll find the money. Where will I find the taxi money to get to work? Whatever the root cause of the problem, it often manifests itself as a lack of money or resources. For the sake of this book, we will define struggle as income less expenses equals minus. The individuals in struggle find themselves in an emotional state of feeling hopeless. This state of struggle is not restricted to low-income earners only. If individuals haven't learned how to be good stewards of resources, they will soon find themselves in a state of struggle. If one doesn't make a conscious effort to escape from this state of struggle, one can soon give in to it and end up living in it for the rest of one's life, living a life of quiet desperation. So how do we escape from this mindset and move forward? This definition provides us with the answer. Work on increasing your income and decreasing your expenses. What the definition fails to point out, however, is you should also adjust your mindset behind your thinking on income and expenses. Increase income and or resources. A. Improve yourself. The one-generational education system has trained us to think like an employee, where our highest value is security. If we have a job, we feel secure. Few employees realize that their income from the job is in direct relation to their value to the employer. This means that if they want to earn more, they will have to make themselves more valuable to the employer. Just studying further for a degree or certificate can be a meaningless exercise if this does not translate into you becoming more valuable to your employer. Toying and going on strike will not make you more valuable for the employer, but could cost you your job. Does it mean that if I want to become a three-generational thinker, I must quit my job and start a business? Not necessarily. Chances are that as you embark on this journey, you'll soon come up with valuable business ideas and might want to go into full-time business for yourself. In the meantime, however, you need to change your attitude at work and start to view your job from the employer's perspective. Use your time at the job to learn as much as you can on how to run a company like that. Volunteer to do more than what your job description requires. Do it without thinking about earning more money. Be honest in your efforts and don't just do it to impress the boss. Doing it for the right motive and to actively find ways to grow the company bigger and better will benefit you in the following ways. You will stand out from the other employees, and your employer will soon entrust you with more responsibilities and with more income. Not only are you very likely to be promoted, but you might even be offered a share in the company and a share of profits. If your employer doesn't value your efforts and doesn't reward them, your employer will soon lose you to another employer that is looking for someone just like you, who would reward you in relation to the value you offer. Or, by learning how to run such a company and what makes it work,
you will soon be able to come up with creative ideas on how to improve on it. Offer it to your employer on the basis that you get a share in the new growth of the company. If your employer is not willing to do so, go out into business for yourself. B. Improve your resources. Change your circle of friends. We become who we associate with. If your friends are not living the life you desire, a three-generational life, make new friends. Remember, like attracts like. Decide what it is you are really interested in. For example, making money or starting your own business. Start reading up on it to improve your vocabulary and understanding on the topic. Then go to events where you are likely to meet people just like you. For example, Chamber of Commerce meetings, business networking meetings, and such like. Take a genuine interest in other people and be open to learn from them. Ask them about their jobs or careers. Ask them what they had to do to get where they are. Ask them what lessons they've learned. Ask them about their ideas for improving their industry or products. Change your mindset. Do not be conformed to this world, this age, fashioned after and adapted to its external, superficial customs, but be transformed, changed, by the entire renewal of your mind, by its new ideals and its new attitude, so that you may prove for yourselves what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God, even the thing which is good and acceptable and perfect in his sight for you. Romans 12:2, Amplified Bible. We cannot solve new problems with old thinking. Start questioning your old belief system. See if there might be components in it that are designed to keep you poor. Stop believing everything you read in newspapers or hear over the radio or see on TV. Remember that the people behind the news decide what they want you to hear or see. Many of the articles you read and programs you hear or see on radio and TV are paid for by the sponsors to influence your mind to think in a certain way. It might even be advisable for a period to wean yourself off any such influences and rather put yourself on a structured, positive, new mindset diet of reading positive books, listening to inspirational programs and shows, and spending time in conversation with positive people. Don't worry about missing out on something important during this time of fasting from TV, radio, and newspapers. If something important happens, your friends will tell you about it. C. Develop additional income sources. Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a portion to seven, yes, even divide it to eight, for you know not what evil may come upon the earth. Ecclesiastes 11:1-2, Amplified Bible. This ancient wisdom reminds us not to depend on just one income source. Let your current job or profession be one of the income sources, but what will you do to develop the other? D. What if I don't have a job, don't know how to do business, and am currently dependent on a grant from the government or the goodwill of people to survive? This is unfortunately a reality for many people in this one-generational system. The loss of a job, or lack of it, could result from any one or a combination of the following factors. The government may be unfriendly towards entrepreneurs and creates restrictive laws that do not encourage the creation of jobs by entrepreneurs. Dictating a minimum wage to an employer strips the employer's choice to use his scarce resources to create more capacity and develop more people. If a government would scrap a minimum wage policy, the natural laws of the marketplace will kick in and people will be free to earn what they are worth. Entrepreneurs would be able to experiment with new business ideas with employees who are willing to take the risk with their employer, knowing that their income potential could grow with the growth of the company. Creating onerous laws that make it very difficult for an entrepreneur to fire people also make it difficult to hire them. Many businesses would have been started and flourishing today if the owner was allowed the freedom to take on staff and develop the product or service, or let them go if the idea did not prove viable. Destroying a system of apprenticeships or on-the-job training takes away the opportunity of an unemployed person to volunteer his services to work for an organization and learn the skills that would enable him to market himself at a sustainable salary. Technology is developing at such a rate that if employees are not willing to be retrained continuously, they must then accept the reality that their skills are becoming obsolete and they will no longer be able to add value to an employer and therefore won't get hired. No amount of striking or toying will change this. There are not enough entrepreneurs to create jobs. This is a result of an educational system that uses the 12 most impressionable years of a child's life to teach him to look for a job instead of training him in how to become an entrepreneur and create jobs. It is the result of a government that creates unfriendly tax laws and impossible administrative red tape that makes it unviable for a startup entrepreneur to risk his resources. The purpose of this book is not to have a go at government, since there are truly great civil servants and politicians in government. They are unfortunately far in the minority with little influence. The purpose of this discussion is rather to stir up people to get out of their one-generational mindset thinking and start to elect officials that have a true understanding of the importance of a three-generational mindset and stop making laws to be popular, but do what is the right thing. Too many untrained and unskilled people. Many people are inherently lazy and look for the easy way out. They have an entitlement attitude that life owes me. They wait for things to happen. When they do get a job, they see it as their right and do nothing to add value to the company. They do not read or study trends, and when a specific industry is overtaken by technology and starts to go down, they are unprepared for the consequences. Unfortunately, this large group of people have voting power and cannot be ignored by politicians that need to win the next election. They are an easy group to manipulate with false promises of an easy life, jobs that will be created by government, high minimum wages, or even promises of nationalization, where the wealth of the entrepreneurs will be confiscated and handed over to the poor. If you are currently in a position of not having a job or steady income, and the gig message up to now has stirred something in you, and you are willing to break the poverty cycle in your family line, here is what you can do. Don't put a label on yourself as being unemployed, but think of yourself as self-employed. This is true. You just haven't given yourself a job yet. Don't wait for government circumstances to do it for you, but take positive action. Decide what you think you would like to do and then approach that company or organization and volunteer your services. By discovering the power of volunteering, you are opening the following possibilities for you. You can now develop new skills that are relevant and marketable in the current economic market. You can build a relationship with the owner, and when he needs to fill a new position in the company, you can make yourself an obvious candidate. You learn the inner workings of a business, and after a while will be able to spot opportunities that have not been exploited. If the owner by then has not created an opening for you, approach him with an offer of exploiting these new opportunities for him in exchange for a job or profit share. This period of volunteering will also quickly reveal to you who you are and where your gifting lies. This way you can discover your purpose and passion in life much sooner. A person working in his passion and purpose will soon attract to himself the resources needed to make a good living. Do you see a man diligent and skillful in his business? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before obscure men. Proverbs 22:29, Amplified Bible. One of the largest international organizations with a massive impact in society, YWAM, www.ywam.org, has been built based on volunteers. Their ratio of permanent staff to volunteers is 1-4. Many of their permanent staff come from people who used to be volunteers. Decrease expenses. To steward this idea of our lives correctly will require drastic change. The one-generational mindset is primarily about a selfish, self-interest, instant gratification behavior of me, my, and I for now, without any consideration for others or for what might happen in the future. It manifests itself into the following negative self-talk. I feel hopeless, therefore I will allow myself the small self-gratification to do some therapeutic shopping to buy something I don't need, but for that few minutes will give me a sense of being worthy. I feel inferior and do not have a positive self-image, therefore I am easily duped by advertising, portraying beautiful people into believing that if I use the same products as them, I will also be like them. I am constantly fearful about the future, and the more I watch the news and read the newspapers, the more fearful I become. I therefore readily believe politicians who make false promises about the future, or who play on my resentments, and who promise that they will take back from the rich to give to me. I know we can't afford the brand clothes, fancy car or house, but we can't let the neighbors think we're not okay. In studying the expense side of your personal budget critically from a three-generational perspective, you will soon see items on which you can save meaningful amounts, provided that you won't allow your ego or fear to dictate. In the chapter on generational budgeting, you will learn a lot about your own behavior when you can distinguish between security needs versus lifestyle needs. Some obvious areas where one can reduce expenses and turn the resulting savings into wealth seeds are insurances. The industry is constantly revising products, and many people are saddled with old policies that are more expensive and provide less protection than new products that are currently on the market. Household expenditure. By making yourself your own best customer, you can turn this expense into an asset by starting your own income-generating business. See www.gnld.co.za. Debt. In South Africa, more than 60% of its active workforce are now so over-indebted, are behind in one or more payments, that the Credit Act has been adjusted to allow a person to make special arrangements with his creditors through the services of a debt counsellor. The result is that the person can pay back his debt faster than he would have by trying to do it on his own and still reduce his monthly payments by 30 to 50%. This reduction in monthly payment can release some money that can be put to savings to avoid further debt. See www.gig-institute.com. Individuals in a struggle mindset have been so thoroughly programmed and conditioned by the one-generational system that to escape it, they must, 1. Admit their condition, same process that gets a chronic alcoholic cured, 2. Sign up or book themselves in for treatment. The gig movement has an orientation program. 3. Commit to an accountability group. The gig movement encourages local gigs. Doing the above will soon get you on the road to the next stage. Stability.
Koppel's Western Cape Radio, CWCP, broadcasting from Worcester, South Africa.
And you've been listening to a reading of part of Chapter 4 from Legacy by Jasper Klote. We're going to finish today's program with a song from a friend of Frikiberta, who opened our show today. He is Salman Frickster. And when Fricky came along to our studio, he brought the CD with this track on it, and he asked me if I'd like to play it, and I indeed would like to play it. And so that's exactly what we're going to do. And after that, we'll have come to the end of the Worcester Reports for today. Tune in again at the same time next week. And unless load shedding changes that, in which case we will announce it on the CWCP radio Facebook page. And Lorianne and I say good day to you and God bless.
Denk vandaag aan jou en aan die wolkse golven. Ik denk vandaag aan jou en aan die eindeloze straat. Ik denk aan rotskastele, watervallen naar beneden. En beeste baaikie sukkel oor die raad. En ik wens dat ek my liedjie vir jou kon sing. En ek weet dat jy die woorde sal verstaan. Ja, ek wens dat ek my liedjie vir jou kon sing. En ek weet dat sal een vonkel in jou oë bring. Ek dink vanaand aan jou en aan die visrivier vallei. Denk vanaand aan jou en aan sy kronkel, kronkel, kronkel. Denk aan stroomversnellings aan die koue winternachte. En kamfierande op die goudgeel saad. En ek wens dat ek my liedjie vir jou kon sing. En ek weet dat jy die woorde sal verstaan. Ja, ek wens dat ek my liedjie vir jou kon sing. En ek weet dat sal een vonkel in jou oë bring. Denk vanaand aan jou en aan die blauw, blauw Kaapse berge. En sprookjes lang en bleek wit op die helder sterlig aard. Ek denk aan waterpoele, wit proteas dien die hange. Maar somtijds vir een oomlik net aan jou. En ek wens dat ek my liedjie vir jou kon sing. En ek weet dat jy die woorde sal verstaan. Ja, ek wens dat ek my liedjie vir jou kon sing. En ek weet dat sal een vonkel in jou oë bring.